In re Thompson v. GMAC.
Good morning, Your Honors. Brian Zeft on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Theodore Thompson. Your Honors, Mr. Thompson's vehicle, upon filing bankruptcy, became part of the property of the bankruptcy estate. The United States Supreme Court in Whitingpool explained that property in which debtor has legal or possessory interest in, upon filing bankruptcy, becomes property of the bankruptcy estate. The Supreme Court noted in its decision that a creditor must turn over property of the bankruptcy estate pursuant to 542A, and that 542A, like all bankruptcy laws, changes or modifies the procedural rights available to a creditor when they look to protect their lien.
Footnote 17 of that opinion on Whitingpool restricts the analysis to Chapter 11, as I understand it, and reserves judgment on the Chapter 13. What's your how do you view that?
That is correct, Your Honor. The majority of courts believe that the reasoning in Whitingpool, there's no distinction behind a Chapter 13 case. With a Chapter 11 case, the businesses need all their properties to successfully reorganize. Here, a Chapter 13 debtor, if the vehicle is their sole transportation to and from work, they need the vehicle in order to remain employed. If they're employed,
suppose it was the repossession of a sofa, would that be equally essential to the activities of the debtor?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. A vehicle's tremendously different to a debtor. A vehicle's necessary for them to get to work.
So this rule only applies to automobiles.
Well, it would apply
to sofas.
It would apply to property that's necessary for a successful reorganization. I don't believe a cell phone would be necessary for a Chapter 13 debtor to successfully reorganize.
Well, under your reading, a creditor would have to turn over a seized assets once the petition had been filed, right? But if the court found that the debtor could not show that he could adequately protect the asset, the creditor would have to seize the asset again, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
So isn't that inefficient, having the creditor to bear the cost of seizing the asset twice?
Well, Your Honor, the remedy that's available for a creditor is to file, if they believe that they're not adequately protected or they believe that their collateral is an irreparable harm, Congress enacted a statute that provided them emergency relief from the stay. Without notice or hearing, they would be entitled to ex parte relief from the stay if it was to prevent damage to the collateral before there was time for notice and a hearing. Your Honor,
there are a lot of risks associated with the vehicle repossession. And essentially, the rule you ask for here would extremely discourage secured creditors from doing repossessions at all until after the bankruptcy got filed.
No. Well, the rule we're looking for is to establish allowing a creditor to successfully reorganize. If they believe that they are not adequately protected or believe that immediate turnover of the vehicle would place their collateral in irreparable harm, as the Whitingpool Court explained, that they cannot just simply withhold possession of the seized property from a debtor's efforts to reorganize, but must seek their congressionally established bankruptcy procedures when looking to protect their lien.
And so if the car is just sitting in the lot, say of GMAC, because they've possessed it, your position is that that is not a great difficulty to turn that over to the bankruptcy?
Absolutely not. The debtor, after filing bankruptcy, has a right to use the property under 363. Courts believe that if they are interfering with their use, this is an attempt to exercise control over property of the bankruptcy estate, which is prohibited by 362A3 of the Bankruptcy Code. Although the Bankruptcy Code doesn't define what exercise of control is, majority of courts have looked to the 1984 amendments to this section and have explained that by Congress adding the phrase exercise of control, they must have intended to prohibit a different type of conduct than the already prohibited conduct of obtaining possession. The Tenth Circuit bankruptcy appellate panel in Yates stated that if exercising control means anything, it means the ability to deny others access to and use of an object. The court also looked at how 362A interacted with 542A. They explained that 542A was a compulsory turnover provision which prevented a creditor from exercising control over property of the bankruptcy estate. They explained that The mandatory turnover provision of 542A and how it's combined with the protective measures of 362A serve to gather property of the bankruptcy estate, for the benefit of all other creditors, and helps to avoid one creditor from withholding property of the bankruptcy estate to negotiate for preferred treatment at the detriment to all other creditors.
That's the Yates case, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
The Yates case, it seems to me, it emphasizes the question of burdens and really analyzes this problem in terms of burdens. Is that your view of the burdens, or who's got the burden to do what is the essence of this
Absolutely.
Question?
Absolutely, Your Honor. If you require a debtor to have to file a lawsuit inside of a bankruptcy, it jeopardizes their ability to successfully reorganize. As I said before, that this might be their only transportation to work. If they can't get to work, they will lose their job. If they might also have to incur additional expenses that their limited budgets can't absorb. Also, an adversary won't be heard for 30 days. Although we have an ability to bring an expedited hearing, we have a heightened standard because we have to look for a temporary restraining order. That's in stark contrast to a creditor who can get ex parte relief from the automatic stay if they believe that they're inadequately protected. Also, 542A, a majority of courts believe, imposes an affirmative duty upon a creditor to turn over property to the bankruptcy estate upon the filing of bankruptcy. They believe that this is not predicated on any stay violation, any court order, any demands of a creditor, and that failure to turn over the collateral is an attempt to exercise control over property of the bankruptcy estate in violation of the automatic stay. Also, Your Honor, the majority of courts have looked to the language of both 542A and 362A. Absent from 362A is an exception for adequate protection from the automatic stay. These courts believe that a creditor cannot simply withhold possession of the property solely on their subjective beliefs regarding adequate protection.
As I understand it, the 11th Circuit is the only circuit that has held against you. Is that correct?
They were dealing, I believe, with Alabama law. The 11th Circuit actually ruled in our favor.
No, but the question is, are they the only circuit that's held against you?
They held against us based on Alabama law. And
they did hold against you, but it's the only circuit that has. That's my question. There are several circuits that are on your side, the 10th.
Actually, the 11th Circuit ruled in our favor when dealing with Georgia law that's substantially familiar with Illinois law.
You're going to claim the 11th Circuit, too. That's all right.
Also, Your Honor, these courts have looked at the language in 542A. In 542A, the shall deliver, courts have interpreted it to be a mandatory turnover provision. Absent from 542A for turnover is any exception for adequate protection. Courts have believed that when Congress intends to have a debtor's right of possession trumped by adequate protection, Congress has clearly said so. For example, when dealing with cash collateral, under 363C2 of the Bankruptcy Code, which deals with cash collateral, a debtor must seek consent from the creditor or a court order and a showing of adequate protection before they can use this type of property of the bankruptcy estate. The majority view here is that the congressionally established bankruptcy procedures for a secure creditor's right of adequate protection do not include unilaterally refusing to turn over property of the bankruptcy estate. They believe that if a creditor believes that complying with the mandatory turnover provision of 542A would place their collateral in irreparable harm, or that they lack adequate protection, their congressionally established bankruptcy procedure is to seek an emergency motion under 362F. If the judge believes that granting ex parte relief from the automatic stay would prevent any damage to the collateral before there's time and notice of a hearing, the majority of courts believe this is the congressionally established remedy for a creditor. Also, Your Honor, there was a second issue raised by this court. Our position, and numerous courts have agreed with us, that a debtor can seek sanctions via a motion rather than a complaint. These courts have explained that that the 10 enumerated proceedings under 7001 do not include motion or a seek for sanctions for automatic stay violation. It also should be noted, Your Honors, that this argument was never raised in front of the bankruptcy judge. And this court has explained before that new arguments raised on appeal are waived. Your Honors, if you have no other questions for me, I'd like to reserve my time for rebuttal.
I'd like to ask one more.
Sure.
The Young case is against you, isn't that correct?
Correct.
They emphasize the fact that the pre-bankruptcy, the pre-1984 procedure in the bankruptcy courts, the old procedure, if you want to look at it that way, favored the creditor. Is that true? And isn't that a significant argument on the other side?
Well, Your Honors, the pre-code practice, I believe, was to seek a court order and a showing of adequate protection before the collateral was turned over. However, Congress recognized this and enacted a turnover provision in 542A. Actually, the case that Judge Golgar cites in his certification, which we failed to cite to, and I believe GMAC failed to cite to, discusses the congressional hearings on the floor when enacting 542A. They explain in the hearings that this section was not intended to require an entity to deliver property of the bankruptcy property to the trustee if that entity has obtained a court order authorizing that entity to retain possession or control over that collateral. Here, GMAC never asked for any such order to allow them. They actually brought a motion to modify the automatic stay, which is when you seek relief from the automatic stay. It's not an exception to the automatic stay. They also alleged that there was $2,100 of equity in the vehicle. So they were adequately protected when they brought this motion. I see I've ran into my rebuttal time. I'd like to save the remainder. Thank you.
Mr. Philbrick.
May it please the Court, my name is James Philbrick. I'm representing GMAC LLC. I think one of the most important things for this Court to look at is the actual case law that has been rendered in this district, in the Northern District of Illinois, that addresses the very issue before this Court.
Well, what about the circuits, the 6th, 8th, 9th, 10th, and according to counsel, and his interpretation of that 11th Circuit case?
Correct, Your Honor. The specific circuits, coming from specific circuits, but not actually the Court of Appeals themselves. I think you have a number of bankruptcy appellate courts that have decided this issue, but not the actual Court of Appeals.
I do admit the bankruptcy appellate panel.
Correct.
Is that true in some other circuits?
Correct.
Yeah. Well, that's, I don't know if it's equivalent to the Court of Appeals, but it's at the same level for this purpose, isn't it? I mean, it decides the circuit law.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
Bankruptcy
right.
panel has their decision is applicable to the circuit. So.
Correct. Yes, binding on the circuit. It's just that in those circuits, there's a specialized panel that deals with bankruptcy cases. But that precedent, we can't ignore that, can we?
No, I'm not suggesting that at all.
And can you cite any precedent from any court of appeals that supports your position that passively holding onto an asset in which a bankruptcy estate has an equitable interest does not constitute exercising control over the asset within the meaning of 362A3?
Not any appellate court precedent, no. But, Your Honor, again, I think it's important to remember, to look at these cases that have been, again, decided here in the Northern District of Illinois. You have the In re Spears case, In re Quality Healthcare, In re Coleman, and, of course, In re Nash. I think that they bring some very serious points that need to be addressed by this court. First of all, the Spears case, I think, really, it's decided by Justice Lefkoe, really clearly and succinctly articulates the reasons why, in this case, GMAC has not violated the automatic stay. Again, the passive.
Can you keep your voice up a little bit?
I'm sorry. Again, the passive act of retaining a vehicle that has been repossessed pre-petition is not the kind of affirmative act that one thinks of when they think of a violation of the automatic stay under 362K. I think that case clearly articulates the fact that really the purpose of the automatic stay is to maintain the status quo, and it's also to prevent creditors from acting upon any collection activities upon the debtor. Now, in this case, GMAC repossessed the vehicle. It had clear right to possession of the vehicle at the time of case filing, and I think that's important.
There's nothing in the Whiting Pools case, though, that said anything about the status quo, is there?
No, Your Honor, but there was also nothing in the Whiting Pools case that suggested that somehow 542A was self-effectuating and created an affirmative mandate by a creditor. There was only really two holdings in Whiting Pool, and none of them addressed the issue before this court. Now, again, Your Honor, I think the cases decided again in this district clearly state that 542 doesn't have this kind of mandate approach that is being suggested by Thompson.
Let me just ask you, this is relating to this Chapter 11 versus Chapter 13. If Mr. Thompson was a corporation and filed a Chapter 11 rather than a Chapter 13, you agree that GMAC would have to return the car?
I would agree that it's property of the estate, Your Honor. I would not necessarily agree that the turnover, I think turnover...
Well, turn it over to the estate.
Correct.
Right.
I think, again...
You're saying you would concede that...
I would not concede that they would have to... There would be any kind of mandate for them to turn it over. I'm just suggesting that the Whiting Pool decision that it's property of the estate would be basically an effect as to a Chapter 13.
So
as
you're
well.
Distinguishing Whiting Pools on grounds that this is Chapter 13 and not Chapter 11, is that...
Your Honor, I think, again, I don't think that Whiting Pools suggests or rules in any way that the creditor has any kind of mandate to turn over the property of the estate. Again, Whiting Pools only, there's only holding from Whiting Pools is that the property that was seized pre-petition by the IRS was property of the estate and could be drawn into the estate.
Right. Under 542. So if it's deemed property of the estate and could be drawn into the estate, then if Thompson was a corporation, then GMAC, at the request of the estate, would have to return the automobile.
I don't think so. Absent any kind of adequate protection, I don't think so, Your Honor. That's not what the Supreme Court...
I think the bottom line here is, can you use possession as leverage to extract what you mm-hmm. believe to be an appropriate assurance of protection? Isn't that about it? I mean, if you hang on to the car until the debtor comes up with what you think is an adequate mm-hmm. assurance of protection, that's what you'd like to do here, I gather, isn't it?
Well, Your Honor, I think it's important for the creditor to put that issue before the court. Even in the cases that have ruled against a creditor, in cases, again, that were cited by the debtor, if you look at those cases, even those cases recognize the interplay between 542A and 363E. One of the main cases...
Oh, sure, you've got leverage. You've got the remedies. You can, under 542A and so forth, you've got a lot of... You can ask for emergency relief, can't you? Mm-hmm. That's a remedy.
Correct, or you can move to modify the stay.
But I think the issue is, can you just use the possession of the car gives you some leverage over the debtor, and can you employ that to get your what you think is an appropriate protection?
And if you do that, can't you then extract from the debtor monies or funds that would put you at a higher status than other creditors and might give you a greater return than if the property had been considered with all the other creditors?
Well, Your Honor, again, you're still bound by bankruptcy law. You're still bound by the fact that the debtor has the right to value the property as to the fair market value of the property. So, again, a creditor could do that, but I think in the cases, especially in the cases cited by the debtor, you look in those cases, and the courts in those cases clearly stated that the reason why there was some kind of violation of the automatic stay is because the creditor hadn't done anything to put the adequate protection issue before the court. In other words, they hadn't filed a motion to modify stay or a motion for adequate protection payments. Now, counsel seems to indicate that GMAC simply filing a motion does not put the adequate protection issue before the court. One of the key elements in a motion to modify stay is the issue of adequate protection. The court cannot modify the stay without adequate protection. If adequate protection is being shown, the court cannot modify the stay. So a motion to modify stay clearly puts the issue of adequate protection before the court. And again, I think if you look at the cases cited by Thompson, if you look at those cases, especially if you look at Metro Media Fiber Network, here's a case that clearly states the debtor, the creditor, should have done something to put the issue of adequate protection before the court. I think if the creditor does that, then the creditor is really not trying to extract any kind of unfair damage. Now, here, this is what GMAC has done. The GMAC attempted to negotiate with the debtor. It's obviously that wasn't going to work. It put the issue of adequate protection before the court. It filed a motion to modify stay some 2 weeks after the case was filed, which in this district is pretty fast. Again, the motion to modify stay was heard. It was the debtor that requested 4 weeks of that, a continuance of 4 weeks of that motion to modify stay. So really any kind of delay here wasn't caused by GMAC. It was caused by the debtor. And again, there really is no burden upon the debtor in having to have these issues litigated before turnover of the vehicle is ordered.
Well, what about counsel's argument that the debtor could continue to go to work if they had the car and then make money and therefore have more money to put into the estate and that, you know, to deal with the creditors?
Your Honor, again, that certainly is an argument. However, if you look at the facts of the case, it's simply not true. The debtor, the vehicle was repossessed on January 24th. The debtor didn't file bankruptcy until almost 11 days later. Yet the debtor had the ability to fund a plan during that interim. The debtor had some kind of transportation to get to and from work. And again, the debtor on the GMAC's motion to modify stay, the debtor is the one that requested a 4-week continuance in order to work these things out.
And I understand the factual scenario of this case, but don't we have to look beyond that in terms of the impact of adopting the interpretation that you would like us to adopt?
I think
there may be debtors out there who couldn't go to work in the interim period. They may be in districts that are not as efficient and as fast in terms of dealing with these motions.
That may very well be, Your Honor, but however, you could also have a situation where the debtor is driving a 2008 Cadillac Escalade that's worth $50,000. And under the scenario espoused by Thompson, there would be a case where GMAC automatically has to turn over that vehicle. That could be a vehicle that's of inconsequential value to the estate. If the vehicle is worth $50,000, if the debt owed on the vehicle is $50,000, and the actual value of the vehicle is at $35,000, under that scenario, GMAC would have had to return this vehicle, and ultimately, the debtor probably couldn't afford it. And there's a lot of cases where if you actually look at the scenarios and you look at the facts, and the judge has to look at the facts to determine adequate protection, there could be cases where the vehicle is, again, of inconsequential value to the debtor and to the estate.
And couldn't you then come in on an emergency motion in that scenario?
You could, Your Honor. But again, I think, especially in our district, the standard procedure is to come in on a motion to modify stay. I don't know that any judge would consider, you know, such a scenario, especially given our case law in this district on this issue.
Isn't there a provision of the code that with respect to cash collateral that the debtor has to get the creditor's authorization to use the use cash collateral?
Yes, sir.
And doesn't that show that Congress could make that kind of a rule if they put their mind to it? I mean, they have a special rule for cash collateral. And your argument is to apply that, as I understand it, generally, isn't it?
Your Honor, if you look at 542A in and of itself has defenses to a turnover of property to the state. One of them is inconsequential value. Now, the 542 doesn't have any mechanisms for raising defenses. And again, defenses is of collateral that's of inconsequential value. Now, you could very well have that, and what's the mechanism for doing that? Also, 542 states that the property has to be of use to the trustee. And if that certainly shows that the logical interaction between 542A and 363E, which says that in order to have the use of the collateral, the debtor or the trustee has to provide adequate protection. It seems to me that the debtor in this case wants all of the rights of the trustee in order to gain this collateral, but none of the responsibilities. The debtor doesn't want to provide GMAC with adequate protection before turning over the vehicle is ordered. I think that's one of the clearest. And again, even if the court looks, the majority of the cases cited by Thompson, the courts recognize the fact that there is this interaction. And again, even in looking at the Ryan case, and also the Yates case strongly hints at the fact that the creditor waited almost 2 months before filing a motion to modify the automatic stay and putting the issue before the court. The court clearly hints at the fact that if the creditor had put the issue before the court, it might not be in a position of having sanctions in those cases. And again, as the Metro Media case states, filing a motion to modify a stay does one or two things. It puts the issue of adequate protection before the court, and it also protects a creditor from a charge that it has somehow violated the automatic stay. And again, those are cases. A lot of the cases cited by the debtor have that sort of reserve that if the creditor somehow puts the issue of adequate protection before the court, then that's another issue. That's another thing that the judge has to consider in determining sanctions. I also think it's important to note that the spirit of the automatic stay is really not being violated here. Again, the court should not extrapolate a passive action into punishing a creditor who has simply passively held onto property which it actually had a right to retain upon the filing of the bankruptcy case. And with that, Jim is your rest. And I ask that the decision of the bankruptcy court be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Filbert. Mr. Zeff, how much time? 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. It should be noted that the circuit court cases and the bankruptcy appellate court cases that we cite throughout our opinion, our brief, has basically the same factual scenario as what's going on here. Also, what is absent is that Mr. Thompson, yes, he was able to get to his one job through the public transportation of the city of Chicago. He had a second job. He was an entertainer, and he worked outside of the city, which he was unable to go to. Many of the of Chapter 13 debtors have more than one job. Also, Your Honors, GMAC says that they put this issue of adequate protection in front of the courts. They filed a motion to modify the stay. They stated they had a lack of adequate protection. Their order seeked to modify the stay. They made no request under 363E of the bankruptcy code for a request in the alternative for adequate protection. Also, Your Honors, the status quo argument is not supported by the bankruptcy code. It is a remedy that's been created by the bankruptcy courts that allow a creditor to look to their non-bankruptcy remedies of withholding possession. This reasoning behind it was largely rejected by the Whiting-Cole court, who said you can't simply withhold possession of the seized property from a debtor's efforts to reorganize. Also, they said that you must look to your congressionally established bankruptcy procedures when looking to protect your lien. By allowing a creditor to subjectively determine what adequate protection is, strips the bankruptcy court of its powers. The bankruptcy court under 363E determines what adequate protection, not GMAC. Also, it causes a detriment to debtors' efforts to successfully reorganize, which places other creditors at there's a detriment to all other creditors. Your Honors, we ask for this court to reverse the bankruptcy court's ruling and remand it for determination of damages.
Case will be taken under advisement. Thank you, counsel. Thank you.